I will call the meeting of the Zoning Board of Appeals to order. Please call the roll.
Chairman Martin.
Here.
Ms. Davis.
Here.
Mr. Dombrowski.
Here.
Mr. Lucchese.
Here.
Mr. Plavach.
Here.
Ms. Price.
Here.
Ms. Shoemaker.
Here.
Everybody's here.
All right. The first thing on our agenda this evening is a review of the minutes from our meeting on February 8th. These minutes were prepared and circulated for everybody's review. If you've had an opportunity to review them, will somebody make a motion to approve the minutes from our meeting on February 8th?
I'll make a motion to approve the minutes from February 8th.
Second. Any discussion? I'll call the roll, please.
Chairman Martin.
Yes.
Ms. Davis.
Yes.
Mr. Dombrowski.
Yes.
Mr. Lucchese.
Yes.
Mr. Plavach.
Yes.
Ms. Price.
Yes.
Ms. Shoemaker.
Yes.
All right, then at that meeting, we approved some findings of fact for the variation request to 214 Gale. Again, these findings of fact were submitted in draft form. There's some changes made. What you've got before you tonight indicates the changes that was from what was initially delivered to you. So if somebody would make a motion to approve these findings of fact, please.
I'll make a motion to approve the findings of fact.
All right. Is there a second? Any discussion? I'll call the roll, please.
Chairman Martin.
Yes.
Ms. Davis.
Yes.
Mr. Dombrowski.
Yes.
Mr. Lucchese.
Yes.
Mr. Plavach.
Yes.
Ms. Price.
Yes.
Ms. Shoemaker.
Yes.
All right, the next matter on the agenda this evening is a continuation of our hearing for the proposed amendment request to the commercial district zoning regulations. We initially began this hearing in January. It was continued until February meeting to give the village and the village people an opportunity to provide some additional information and answer some questions that were raised at our January meeting. I was informed this afternoon that the village does not yet have the plans completed or the studies completed that we asked them to submit. So we're not going to be prepared tonight to make any decision and make any recommendation to the village board of trustees. That being said, the public hearing was continued to today, and we are open to permitting anybody who's here that wishes to speak to go ahead and address us tonight. But any decision is going to have to be postponed until we get these studies or additional information from the village's planning consultant. So if you've got nothing, if you want to address this tonight, that's fine, but we're not going to make a decision. And what you tell us tonight, you know, may not no longer be the fact after we get these decisions from get this information from the planning consultant. So with that kind of admonition, I'd ask anybody who has signed up and intends to address this tonight on the proposed changes to the commercial district zoning regulations to stand up so you can get sworn in.
To those who will testify at the public hearing, you are reminded that the River Forest Village Code makes it unlawful for any person to knowingly make a false statement of material fact to the village in connection with any application, report, affidavit, oath, certification, or attestation. Violations are punishable as a petty offense with a fine. Please raise your hand. Do you solemnly swear or affirm that you will give true testimony relative to the matters before this Zoning Board of Appeals?
All right, Mr. Walsh is going to address us first and try to answer some of the questions that were raised at our January meeting.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chairman Martin and the Zoning Board of Appeals. My name is Matt Walsh. I'm the village administrator. I just wanted to thank everyone for coming tonight to express and share your input on the proposed regulations. The village recognizes that this is a significant change to the commercial regulations. They haven't been changed for several decades. And I think part of the reason we want to take our time on this is to make sure that we incorporate and hear all the feedback from the residents and from the Zoning Board of Appeals. I know that there was information requested in January, and we want to make sure to do a comprehensive job that will paint a proper picture for the residents and Zoning Board of Appeals to make a recommendation to the Village Board. So I know that there are some folks here tonight that were not at the January opening of the hearing, and I wanted to just kind of reiterate and provide an overview of the recommended changes. Some of this will be repetition for the Zoning Board, and I apologize for that, but I just think it would be helpful to have some context for the residents that are looking to provide public testimony tonight. As Chairman Martin mentioned, this will be continued until April, where we will plan to have the questions that were, or the answers to the questions posed in January, as well as any others that come up tonight. And we will go from there. I'll kind of touch on the process as we go through this presentation. So the first question is, why are we here? Why are we doing this? Every 10 to 15 years, the village attempts or adopts a comprehensive plan. The last comprehensive plan was adopted in 2019. In the comprehensive plan, it covers a variety of topics that apply to all village operations, land use, and other things about the day-to-day operations and life in the village. And within that plan, there are several recommendations for things for the village board to consider, whether it's studies or infrastructure investments or considerations of zoning changes. So I highlighted here, I won't read it, but there are several mentions in the comprehensive plan asking the village board to consider amendments to the zoning code to consider additional height in the commercial districts. And that is one of the main changes that are proposed and have been shared with the zoning board introduced in January. Now, the reason why it was recommended in the comprehensive plan, why it was adopted by the village board, and why the village board looked to get input on this topic, a variety of reasons. One of them is kind of the historic approval process and consideration of projects that have been proposed. There have been several projects proposed that require site development allowances that would be that exceeds the code maximum height, maximum density, because that is what the market has bared. And I'll go into that a little bit more moving forward. Another reason is the housing diversity. We believe through this analysis and just through experience that there's a demand for housing for those wishing to age in Village River Forest, those that are leaving their single family residence to move into potentially a multifamily where they don't home, where they don't need to focus on as much of the maintenance and things like that. In addition to potential young professionals that wanted to move out of the city and start living along the train line close to homes downtown. We believe that there is a demand out there and there's not a supply of that type of housing stock in River Forest or enough of it. And then lastly, a main consideration here is the economic development that will bring revenue and services to the village. One of the generators and why the Economic Development Commission has looked at this is because economic development and the highest and best use of certain properties are intended to bring additional property tax revenue, hopefully sales tax revenue, and potentially tax on places of eating tax. And what goes with those is additional service, is whether it's a restaurant or offices or retail that can serve the people of River Forest. I think we all recognize that a lot of the services and retail has to be sought out in our neighboring communities. And one thing I want to touch on just to provide some context to that revenue is the most recent plan development of this type that was completed was the Sheridan over on Chicago and Harlem. That project was approved and brings in approximately $825,000 a year in property taxes. That's not just to the village. About $100,000 worth of that comes to the village. That's a significant amount that will help invest in the personnel and infrastructure investments that the village needs to maintain our services. In addition to that, a lot of the property taxes go to our school districts. In this case, about $240,000 to OPRF and $330,000 to District 90. So for these reasons, the village wanted to take a look at this and explore potential options for amending the code to try and attract consideration and interested developers to look at developing or building or opening their business in River Forest. This process began in late 2022. Economic Development Commission staff and Halsey Levine, our planning consultant, began working together and looking at our existing regulations. After several meetings of the Economic Development Commission, there was a recommendation by that commission to refer the zoning changes to the village board and then on to the Zoning Board of Appeals. In this case, a text amendment, a revision to the code that we're discussing here, the process for that is that the village board is technically the petitioner. They direct staff, myself, to petition the Zoning Board of Appeals with a request for consideration and an amendment to the village code. So that was approved unanimously by the village board on November 13th of last year. And then the public hearing opened on January 11th, as Chairman Martin stated earlier. If you could go back. This will be difficult to read, but this is just provide some additional context. The proposed changes refer to the four commercial districts in town, called C1, C2, C3, and ORIC. And these are different levels of commercial development, and I'll kind of go into where they are. C1 district is along North Avenue. It's the entire frontage of North Avenue, with the exception of St. Vincent's at Lathrop. The C2 district is primarily along Madison Street, all the frontage of Madison Street, and then a couple different pockets around town, along Harlem, and also over at around the corner of Lake and Thatcher. And then the C3 district is right around Village Hall. It's basically from Park Avenue all the way to Lathrop. And then the ORIC district is from Lathrop East to Harlem. That includes the town center and the medical center, as well as some of our taller condo buildings in town. So these next couple of slides are just a overview of what the proposed languages are. I'm sure most of the folks in this room have seen them, and that's why we're here. The left column, or the central column, is the current height maximum. That's currently in effect. And the proposed height maximum is a 15 feet increase on C1, which is along North Avenue, a 20 feet increase in C2, which is along Madison Street and some of those other pockets I described, and then a 15 feet increase in the C3, the Central Commercial District, right across the street, as well as ORIC district that includes the town center from Lathrop to Harlem. Now, I want to point out here that we're not going from 0 to 65. There already is a 50-foot height maximum that's been in effect. And I think that that's a fairly tall building, right? So the building right next door to Village Hall is about 60 feet, just for some reference. And there's several existing buildings that went through the plan development process that exceed 50 feet. We have The Williams condominiums on 435 William, that's about 80 feet. That's the tallest residential building in town. Some of the buildings on at the 400 block of Ashland also exceed 50 feet currently, which is kind of a reference back to my point about why the comprehensive plan recommended consideration of looking at those, that code change, because we're already seeing developments being approved above the maximum. Another change that is proposed is a revision to the residential density. Currently, the residential density is calculated by dwelling lot area per dwelling unit. So right now it's 2,800 square foot per dwelling unit. Now I'll put this in perspective. The Lake and Lathrop lot is a little under an acre. So that would allow, per this code, about 13 units on the site, just for to help picture it. The proposed change here is 1,000 square foot per dwelling unit. In that case, an acre lot about the size of Lake and Lathrop would be approximately 42 units. Residential parking. Parking restrictions are have a significant impact on the ability for builders to build on their property. Parking takes up a lot of space, and it can be very expensive to put in parking garages. So right now, our code has parking restrictions that kind of level up depending on the size of the units. Right now, as you'll see in that center column, every zoning district of these commercial districts requires at least two spaces per unit, and that goes up to 2.5 spaces per unit for three-bedroom dwelling units. And then also, depending on how many units in the building, if there's 40 units in the building, there would be a requirement of 8 guest spaces. The proposal is to just make that a flat rate of 1.5 spaces per unit. The hope here, and why the Economic Development Commission wanted to see this, is because we think that one of the benefits of building River Forest is its proximity to transit lines, and we hope that those looking to build to live in this proposed multifamily properties would not require more than 1.5 spaces per unit. Now, this is just the minimum. There certainly developers could propose in excess of that. There's concepts out there where buildings have shared zip car type things to try and alleviate this, to so that you can reserve certain times so that not everyone has to bring their two cars to and park them on site, because we're not looking at any the overnight parking ban is here to stay, and we're not going to be revising that. So we know that parking needs to be provided on site and to limit the impact on the neighbors. And on that, I forgot a point earlier about the comprehensive plan. I know that I picked two passages from the comprehensive plan that focus on looking at the building heights. I also recognize that comprehensive plan also spends a lot of time, a lot of energy, a lot of chapters in protecting the single family residential character of the village. There's a lot of references to buffering and other ways to limit commercial development in town, and that will remain. I think the plan development process will not be changed. And part of that intent is that if there is an impact on the neighboring communities, if there's not, it's the village's prerogative to enforce that a proposed project will have a public benefit, will have those landscaping, have those buffering to limit the impact on the neighbors. And that would be assessed on an individual basis depending on those proposed developments. So other considerations, I want to touch here a little bit on some of the things that have come up back at the January public hearing. Impact on schools is naturally a very big concern. If there's a lot of units coming in with a lot of bedrooms, there's going to be a lot of school kids, and that could lead to higher costs for the school district, and capacity concerns. I met with Superintendent Condon on this question a few weeks ago and just kind of explained to him what was being proposed. We talked a little bit about their projections for the schools. Every so many years, they do a geodemographic study to kind of plan their future capital projects. I know that it was referenced that several decades ago, a school closed in town, and there were concerns that that would be a regret. I think it's not necessarily the place of Dr. Condon to approve or deny opinions on this type of proposal, but Dr. Condon's concern or request was that the village have conversations with the school district when projects are proposed. Now, the village has a school impact fee built into its code for when there are projects proposed, that there would be a fee immediately sent to the school district to potentially pay for any capital improvements. And there's a calculation based on how many students per unit that goes into that. And on this point, I think that back to the property tax conversation, the schools certainly have a concern about the capacity and how many kids are in the system, but they also have a concern about property taxes. The school districts are even more reliant on property taxes than the village. That's their primary revenue stream. And they also want to see economic development. That's reasonable. In my conversation with Dr. Condon, I explained to him some of the challenges that we see with development. And in this landlocked historic community, it's difficult to see economic development, even with these proposed zoning changes. That will continue to be a challenge because our lots are small. Residential is immediately adjacent to commercial districts, and there's a lot of concerns that come with that. We've seen that happen with the Sheridan. We've seen that happen with Lake and Lathrop, and we've seen that with any proposal that comes forward. And that's why it is difficult to see economic development come forward. The hope with these changes is that it will at least attract additional consideration. There will still be the robust process that is the plan development process, several public hearings, neighborhood meetings, and the village board will ultimately make the decisions on those and put conditions on them that limit the potential negative impact that they would have on the adjacent neighbors and on community. Traffic is certainly a concern in town, as I'm sure many residents will refer to tonight. As part of the plan development process, let me take a step back. Plan development process, we have a very low threshold for what needs to go through the plan development process. If a resident has a single family home and wants to demolish it and put up a two flat, they would require to go through the plan development process because that's increasing the density of their lot. So any project that we're thinking of, any multifamily project, anything that's going to be 20,000 square feet, requires a public going through the plan development process. As part of that plan development process, there's a long list of things that need to be submitted for the development review board's consideration. Development review board, several members of the ZBA are also on the development review board, as well as members of the plan commission. That's also a recommending body that evaluates and scrutinizes proposals before recommending it to the village board. One of those items on that list is that a traffic study must be submitted with any proposed development. They can project how many cars are going to be on site, what the likelihood of trips are going to be, and apply it to that neighborhood that are right there. And what comes of that is either revisions to the plan or conditions that certain right turn restrictions or anything else to try and limit that would come about as those are proposed. Impact on utilities. It came up at the January meeting about the potential impact on, particularly on the water system for these types of developments. We had a water system study done back in 2018, and the village has kind of built its capital improvement plan around that to try and address some of the spots where water pressure was insufficient. And those of you on the north side of town noticed the construction on Lathrop and Lemoyne, that is another project to improve the water pressure up in that section of town. That was identified as a weak point in the system. A lot of the work that happened down near Madison Street was completed several years ago. You go ahead, Jess. So that was an overview of what the proposals are, the process, and looking forward. As I said at the beginning, this is a significant change, and the village recognizes that. We want to make sure that we are addressing all the questions and concerns that came up. We had a January meeting. We had several residents provide testimony. We've included references to this public hearing in several of our weekly communications, and we will continue to do that for the continuation of the hearing. Myself and the staff, as we're evaluating some of those items, the shadow study, comparable parking ratios for some of the things that exist in town, and then also the potential impact. There were some questions about kind of the hypotheticals if a majority or a lot of the potentially likely sites, the most likely sites for development, that's not always easy, are evaluated for what could be done with the proposed code language as it's proposed. And then after that continuation of public hearing, once the Zoning Board of Appeals feels that enough testimony has been provided by the village as well as the residents and any other stakeholders, that public hearing will close and the Zoning Board of Appeals will deliberate and provide a recommendation to the village board. The village board will need to, that will be submitted then to the village board for approval or denial or reference back to the zoning board before it's actually in effect. As I mentioned, the plan development process will remain and will apply to most of the any project that is going to increase the density or be 20,000 square feet. Even if it's not a residential project and was going to be 20,000 feet, it would require the plan development process. That requires notices at least three times to neighbors within 500 feet, and which will be supplemented by our additional online communications. And then my last point here is just to reiterate that even with these proposed changes, there will be challenges just given the layout of our village. A lot of villages wrestle with how to attract growth and safe growth. A lot of places that have a lot of space where you see, new subdivisions popping up and, need to go out and buy new schools. That's not what we have here. We've got 2 square miles. We've got very few opportunities for development. And that has always been a slow process, in part because of our plan development process, which I think is in place so that the proper attention and scrutiny can be given to those so that rash decisions are not made going forward. And those will continue even with these proposed changes. That's all I have.
Anybody from the board have any questions for Mr. Walsh?
I have one question. What is the height of the Sheridan building?
I do not know. Okay. I should have looked that one up.
Could you share with me Superintendent Condon's capacity estimates for future?
Yes, I can. There's a document that they had that's FOIA-able. The projections as it stood in 2022 when the study was performed was that a slight decline over the next decade was expected. That's primarily due to just smaller households than there once were. There, I will qualify that a little bit, that study does not take into account because they hadn't made the decision to expand their kindergarten program. And then Dr. Condon also relayed that, you know, there's maybe certain requirements that come from the state or policy decisions that the school board make that will increase the students just because of a wider pool to pull from. And that isn't evaluated in that study.
All right. Any other questions for Mr. Walsh? All right. So we'll look forward to hearing from the village and your consultants, hopefully next month, with answers to some of the questions that have been raised to this point. So now we're going to ask Mr. Raddatz to call on the individuals who signed up indicating they wish to address the board this evening. You'd step up to the podium so that and give us your name and address for the record. That would make it very easy.
Patty Hennick.
Good evening. I'm Patty Hennick, and I live at 731 Bonnie Bright. Residents are often told that they will have an opportunity to provide input and have their voices heard prior to major decisions that might impact them. They are told the process will be open and the public will be invited to engage. It has been my experience time and again that these have been empty promises. When it comes down to it, there is merely a show of an open, collaborative process. During review of the Lake and Lathrop development in 2018, trustees were guided to be hands-off the development review board process. We were told to let the process play out and that we would have time at our board table to ask questions or voice concerns to try and get changes. I followed that directive, but still attended the DRB meetings. I heard the many concerns from residents and DRB members. I shared some of the same concerns. However, once it came to our table, I was then told, what more was there to discuss? The DRB voted. I had President DeDucci at my house for 3 hours the day before the vote doing a hardcore press to get me to just vote yes. In the end, no material changes were made to the plan to reflect community input. And as an aside, it's unfortunate that we're looking at a failed development that is not increasing or stabilizing our tax base. I'm on record as a regrettable yes for the senior facility, only because I felt more could have been done to get changes that would have limited the negative impact on the adjacent neighbors. In 2020, plan commission members were led to believe that they were working on a 2020 plan specifically for River Forest, when really, discussions with the plan commission were guided by our paid expert towards a predetermined product, which was a 2004 affordable housing plan from Wilmette. I know at the time, some commission members felt played. Many in the community were upset about the process. In my opinion, the same thing is happening here. While it is true that during the discussions in 2019, when updating the comprehensive plan, it was noted that some areas of the zoning code should be reviewed. Review being the key word. There was a lot of debate and some concerns about potential changes, especially in regards to increasing building height. There was acknowledgement that the community would want input. According to the March 7, 2019 Plan Commission minutes, quote, Mr. Housiel stated that there will be public hearings before zoning changes are made and anticipates that they would be robustly attended meetings, end quote. Clearly recognizing residents would engage on this topic. Of course, it's hard to get robustly attended meetings when there is minimal effort made to inform the community or actively invite residents to engage. At a November Village Board meeting, three trustees pointed out the importance of informing the community about the proposed zoning changes. Several ideas were discussed. However, not much was done beyond one public notice buried in the Wednesday Journal days before Christmas. If it hadn't been for a few residents closely following this topic, there would have been even less attendance at the January hearing. Thank you, by the way, for providing the opportunity tonight for more public comment. During that same November meeting, President DeDucci made a point of asking our village administrator how many meetings were held by the Economic Development Commission as a way to illustrate this was an open process. Yes, EDC meetings are open to the public, and yes, discussions happened over the course of several meetings. But can anyone say there was a good faith effort to invite residents to this meeting, to these meetings? How many here check those agendas on a regular basis? From what I can tell, no material changes have been made from what John Housiel first introduced to the EDC to what is now before the ZBA that reflects resident input or concerns have been addressed. In part, the reason we have a ZBA process is because some codes are not a one-size-fits-all. We currently have a zoning code that states a homeowner with a non-conforming side yard setback cannot build a second-story addition by right. They are required to go through the ZBA process to make the case that the addition will not negatively impact the neighbor's property. This specific code has been reviewed over the years more than once by multiple ZBA commissioners and village board members. Each time it was voted to maintain the code, even though several times over the years, variances were granted that allowed some residents to build a second-story addition. Commissioners and trustees saw value in maintaining the process of evaluating requests on a case-by-case basis. I would argue that the same applies to the height restrictions on future development. Even though variances have been approved in the past, there is still value in evaluating each project on a case-by-case basis. Even our EDC chair acknowledged in discussions that he could see taller buildings on some property, but maybe not other property on Lake Street. I wanted to include, just based on comments from Matt, when you talked about the other considerations, again, during that plan development process, all those various things are submitted and looked at, right? If we change the code to allow things by right, like the height and reducing parking, you no longer have that as part of the plan development process, that give and take negotiation about what can happen. In closing, I would ask you to take your time evaluating the proposed changes, even if you are pushed for a decision. Take the time to digest what is being said by the community. Will these changes really benefit the community at large, or maybe just potential developers? Put yourself in the position of those residents who may be most negatively impacted by those zoning changes. As noted in our budget documents, residents are at the top of River Forest organizational chart. Decisions should reflect what residents want and not just what a paid consultant tells us. Thank you.
Debbie Borman.
Good evening, Debbie Borman on the first block of Lathrop. I want to thank the board again for continuing this hearing to listen to additional residents' views on the proposed text amendments. I do have one question before I get started, and that is whether letters and emails that are sent to the ZBA by residents who cannot attend the hearings are read by the commissioners and included into the record. In January, I know some residents who could not attend that hearing sent some letters. So I'd just like to make sure that all of the views, even for those who cannot attend, are included in your record, if anyone can confirm.
Any written communication sent to the board is included in the record that goes to the trustees. I can't promise that they're all read.
Good enough. I just want to make sure you read them and have them. All right. I am here to provide a surrebuttal to the rebuttal provided by John Housiel at the January hearing. But before I start that, I would like to briefly recap in a concise summary what the residents of South River Forest have been enduring since 2016, because all of this is connected. First of all, we have an unwanted tax increment financing district for 22 homes. Now 20, two of them have been demolished. We watched the neighborhood become blighted as the village bought property, then neglected maintenance for 6 years. We watched the failure to save a historic building featured in the village-wide architectural and historical survey dated August 9, 2013. And there's a picture of that now demolished building in there. We then endured a botched demolition, a contract with an unprofessional demolition team, demolition of four buildings that takes 9 months, while at the same time subjecting nearby residents to stress and health concerns, including exposed asbestos, failure to properly remediate hazardous materials pursuant to a 543-page environmental study. We endured the village lying about the study and the failure to remediate, then half-heartedly contracting at the 11th hour to remediate the building, only after workers quit demolition when being exposed to asbestos. We endured the village subjecting neighbors to dangerous conditions. At one time, the owner of the demolition company broke into the house two doors down from me with a sledgehammer instead of using keys to enter the building. This was not known at the time that this happened, but my neighbor texted me a picture of the window being broken. There were two teenagers at home, and this was very dangerous and scary. We are subjected to the improper preparation of the soil and ground cover in the vacant lots, such that the entire block from Ashland midway to Lathrop is filled with ice during the winter, and now water that does not drain, flooding the alley parallel to Madison between Ashland and Lathrop. I have a video on a flash drive here, if you'd like to show it, of geese and ducks frolicking in what we now call Lake Ashland. I'll leave this here for later. We have endured the village entirely ignoring the neighbors' views. I primarily covered this topic in January, and others have and will speak on this tonight. You have letters and testimony of neighbors in your packet that you've reissued for tonight. In January, John Housel bragged, literally, about forums that were shared to propose the changes and consider the residents' views as if this process was open and fair. You've already heard about that. Some of these meetings were framed to us as stakeholder meetings originally. I can't remember the term that John Housel used in January, but it was a different term. However, not one aspect of the proposed amendments changed after the stakeholders shared our views in meetings. This led us to conclude that these meetings were staged breadcrumbs to attempt to satisfy alleged adherence to transparency. As for my surrebuttal, the rezoning on Madison reads as illegal spot zoning. Housel was adamant that Madison's rezoning was not illegal spot zoning. It is, though, because the proposed zoning amendment affects only the corner of Ashland and Madison. For those that aren't aware, spot zoning is the illegal application of zoning to a specific parcel that conflicts with current zoning restrictions. Spot zoning is presumptively invalid as an arbitrary, capricious, and unreasonable treatment of a limited parcel of land. The size of the parcel is not the sole defining characteristic of a spot zone. In this case, the spot zone is Madison Street between Lathrop and Ashland and potentially Franklin. The reason it's a spot zone is because every other plot of land between Lathrop and Thatcher on Madison is already developed, to wit. There's the cleaners, brand new building. There's the problematic apartments between Park and the tracks where the police are called daily. I don't see those designated for redevelopment. There's the brand new townhomes and the former Heinz building supply property. There's a garden center, River Forest Community Center, and the township. And then there's an extensive condo development on Gale, and that's pretty much the end of it. None of this property, as far as we have heard, is indicated for development or demolition, according to the zoning map that was shown earlier. The proposed text amendment further provides an unjustified special treatment that seeks to benefit a developer or future owner while undermining adjacent property owners' pre-existing rights and uses. While Houseel argued that the proposed zoning was not spot zoning because it was indicated in the comprehensive plan, first, as I pointed out in January, this proposal, these amendments, conflict with the spirit and goals of the comprehensive plan. Second, determining whether a comprehensive zoning scheme exists is not based on the number of changes, but rather the overall effect. A zoning change that adds an entirely new and incompatible use reads as illegal spot zoning. The zoning proposal is unnecessarily destructive to the South River Forest neighbors. In terms of building height, in January, Houseel admitted to failing to do a shadow study of a high building against our homes. And now we find out tonight that after 2 months, he has still failed to do this study. I submit that any study done in furtherance of the proposed amendments will still be unreliably slanted towards Houseel's end goal. The neighbors agree that the current zoning for three stories on a property that formerly housed a one to two-story building is sufficient and consistent with neighbors' desires and with the comprehensive plan. In terms of the bedroom requirement, Houseel has stated no justification at any time for removing the bedroom requirement from zoning. During my home renovation this year, I lived next door to a five-story, 19-unit building built in 1973. Each unit has two bedrooms and two bathrooms, with square footage ranging from 1,000 to 1,350. While reducing a square footage requirement for a dwelling might make sense, there is no supported reason to eliminate the requirement that every unit have at least one bedroom. As I live next door, a 1,000 square foot unit can have two bedrooms and two bathrooms. The parking requirement. The village lacks adequate resident parking, especially for multi-unit housing around Madison and North Avenue. The townhomes and condos on Harlem between Lemoyne and Greenfield have two cars lined up, one behind the other, in a single parking space, obstructing alley access. Reducing parking requirements while increasing density will only exacerbate a burgeoning parking problem at the perimeter of River Forest. Building setback. Any reduction of the setback on Madison will result in increased danger and safety risks. Just a week ago, a car crashed into the so-called security fence on Madison and drove straight into the flooded Lake Ashland vacant property. Just a few months ago in Forest Park, just two blocks south, same side of the street, a car crashed into a storefront. I have photos of all of this, and I'm happy to share them with the board later. Madison Street at that point between Lathrop and Thatcher is too narrow for a high building with a short setback. It is an unsafe proposal. My neighbors will be speaking to other objections and issues with these proposed amendments. Finally, the interest in preserving our neighborhood is robust, as was anticipated, but many cannot attend this meeting tonight or these meetings in general for reasons including illness, surgery, work, general exhaustion, personal tragedies, family obligations, and many other things. The last 8 years have taken a toll on River Forest residents' emotional and physical well-being. Our lives have been upended since 2016. As explicitly stated by the village in its communication, these changes in favor of developers are proposed at the expense of the tax-paying residents who live, work, and contribute to this community, some of us for up to and beyond 50 years. We hope the ZBA will consider the rights to quiet enjoyment of all River Forest residents, not merely those homeowners in the middle R1, R2 district, for which no zoning alterations are proposed, and in a future meeting, reject these proposed text amendments. Thank you for your time.
Any questions? Kelly M. Carrion.
Thank you, Chairman Martin and the board. I want to make one comment, a few comments, but the meeting minutes, I feel like I'm a am beating a dead horse on this topic. Why do they never reflect the comments that are made? Your Zoom meeting is recording every bit of audio that's happening and can automatically produce a transcript. Mr. Housel's comments are word for word. Not only was my name misspelled, but the comments aren't even reflective of the points that I made. And they're almost twisted in a way in which it makes it look like I'm in much more favor than I was on that day. I implore you guys to use modern technology that you're using to produce the meeting minutes in a way that represents the viewpoints of the public that are made. Transparency is key in our community, and trust and integrity in the process has to be enforced. So I wanted to make sure that was clear because the meeting minutes got approved earlier. I don't know what meeting minutes got approved, but I will tell you as a resident, I don't approve the comments that were recorded on my behalf. The second thing I'll make is around Mr. Walsh's several things to basically undermine the very grave concerns that were made. I think it's concerning that only 2 weeks ago, he decided to sit down with the superintendent of the schools. Coming from a very small village, as I made commentary about at the last meeting, many of you might have heard, Pickerington, Ohio, was a very small village that became a city while I was growing up and living there. I watched the economic devastation of very poor village planning that was done, minimum thresholds that get overridden and basically ignored, and communities that cannot approve changes to the economic landscape of that community. We went from not being able to have enough schools for the children in which to be educated. We also went to increasing taxes that had no end in sight. All the while, all of these high-rise developments with higher things, those kids continued to enjoy a better school system where their parents were not burdened with the actual tax in which to get their kids into that school. So I don't know what was investigated on schools, but I can tell you personally from growing up in a village that turned into a city, it was a devastation to the school systems. And I implore you to do more than one 30-minute, 60-minute, whatever that conversation was. That is not adequate. The second thing that I will say is that for the fact that there is a minimum threshold, Mr. Housel said that there are meetings in which to approve this. And when asked whether there has been any non-approvals of exceptions made, there were zero. So what are we debating here if at the end of the day, any developer that comes in pretty much gets their wish? I think the Sheridan is a great example. You can pull up the Wednesday Journal article on the web and look at the controversy that caused at that time. I was not myself living in this village at that time, but my in-laws were. And it was quite the stir. By the way, it's 68 and a half roof height at the peak of the four-story building. Lots of controversy that, once again, as many of my counterparts and neighbors here were suggesting tonight, that there were a lot of feedback about that development, all of which went completely ignored and unheeded, and found a way in which to jam that development in regardless of the concerns of the neighbors and the ask of the neighbors around what needed to be modified in order to approve that. So at the end of the day, I don't understand what we think we're doing in terms of trying to update this code. If at the end of the day, there's supposed to be a minimum threshold where there's a review process and every development has a chance to get turned down. I will also say a third point is that on the infrastructure, it was not just about water. Water is clearly an issue, but I watched sewage. I watched police and fire departments. Have you talked to the chief of police? Have you talked to the chief of the fire department? Have you asked them what this type of economic development does to probably an already very stressed system? Because let's be honest, not many people want to be police officers these days due to a lot of lack of support. So we're going to stress a system that's already stressed by a higher density in which solving exactly what, I'm very unclear. What exactly are we solving for this village? If we all wanted to live in Oak Park, where some of these standards seem to be the norm, we would all sell our houses and buy one over there. We don't want to live there. We want to live in River Forest. And we ask you to preserve the village and the nature of a quiet, serene town that we all enjoy as residents, including all of you on the board. The fourth point that I will make is just that at the end of the day, I think it's critically important you guys review the scenarios. If you read Mr. Housel's comments that seem to be accurately captured on the rebuttal, including him saying, I don't know, these are not the opinions of myself, I was directed to do this. So he clearly is a hired gun who works for the village, who's not even a qualified consultant from what I can see. Once again, why do we continue to not bring in the right expertise, do the right studies? As I've mentioned at several meetings before, I'm a data person. I believe you've got to look at data and infrastructure planning, and there's so much you can lean into these days in which to understand scenario estimation of things like turning something into all studio apartments. It was said that it was not looked at how these changes would affect basically enabling no minimum bedroom requirement, just as one example. What I can tell you is when people want to get their kids in good schools, they will shove a family of six into a 900 square foot, 1000 square foot studio apartment. Make no mistake about it. And so at the end of the day, I implore you guys to make sure that you have real data. It's a disappointment that the shadow studies, why they're not done at this point, once again, that was requested. Why do we not have scenario planning? And why isn't the superintendent of the school system here present at this meeting, along with the chief of police, along with the chief of the fire department? Because this not impacts just all of us as residents. It impacts the volunteers who help keep this village safe. Thank you.
Bridget Erfurt.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Bridget Erfurt, and I live at 103 Franklin of 41 years. My husband Dave and I raised five kids there. Why did we choose to move to River Forest? Simple. Because we wanted to move to the village of River Forest and not the city of River Forest, with a skyline along the Madison Corridor with just a skyline of tall buildings. In the early stages, Mr. Housel gathered certain neighbors and said, oh, this is just in the conversation stages, and, you know, had his grandiose diagram up on the overhead projector. And it was alarming because the plans weren't even to scale. And then my elementary teacher site saw Madison spelled M-A-D-D-I-S-O-N. I was insulted. I'm like, where is your consideration for us that care deeply to live in this village? He constantly stated developers won't look unless the height is higher. Developers develop, and then they get dodge out of town. They don't live here. They build and go. We live here. I am troubled that Mr. Housel says, I believe. Words are important. You believe, you think. Give us concrete guarantees. You know, oh, you only need 1.5 garage spaces, well, or parking spaces. Okay, who has 1.5 cars? Well, I believe, you know, people aren't going to have two cars. How many in this town only have one car? I'm sure not very many. And I believe that we deserve a third party look at everything. Shadow, schools, like as everyone has mentioned, Mr. Housel has his own agenda. He's going to say what you want to hear because he wants to push through what his motive is. We need to hear logically, because also I would like to thank all of you kindly for being of service to our village and looking at the greater good of what's going to help all of us. because it is going to impact all of us in this community. So why did we choose to move to the Village of River Forest? Simple. Villages are more close-knit community where people know each other. I can look at some of you at this board, and I know some of you. I'd love to know all of you, but okay, if I'm in a city, I'm not going to know too many people. It's imperative. It's important for people to have quality of life, and a village gives you that. You have strong social connections. Just what's within our community. It's a peaceful place to live. We enjoy tree-lined streets. Bear with me. So there is a demonstration that I want to give, and I want to give it quickly because it's important that everybody is able to see what we're really dealing with. I just briefly Googled what is the population of River Forest, and it said approximately 12,000, and the population of Oak Park is approximately 53,000, and we want to increase our numbers because we want to look like Oak Park. We're not Oak Park, and the numbers show that.
So, I was an elementary school teacher. Everything in life you learn in kindergarten, right? Yes? Nope. This is going to be, like I said, a little bit long. This is just a demonstration of what they want to do on street parking. Okay, so you're going to have a card here about an hour. Okay, so then in the car, here we have our police officer. Here we have another police officer. And there are things that have happened in this village that are, I'll just. There's been a rash of our jackets, which we all know about. In River Forest, there was a group of young men that were in the vicinity of the trailer block of Ashland. They had backpacks. The police were aware of what was going on with these kids with these jackets. Five towns sprouted in because they all knew what these kids were trying to do. One of the folks back in the backyard. These are like frantically looking for this man. In that backpack, if I have it correct, was an AR-47. Okay? My neighbor found that. She brought it into her dining room table and called the River Forest Police. And, you know, was in a complete state of shock. There's trouble. We have things that are going on in River Forest. Okay, then we have our ambulance. Then we have our fire department. Then we have another fire truck. Then we have another truck. Okay, so where, if somebody's, here they are trying to get northbound up to North Avenue to where our neighbors that we feel very near and dear to get to an emergency for them. And it's going to be non-existent because here we got a car going south and he's got nowhere to pull over to let fire and rescue get through. So how is ludicrous to think that you're going to do on-street parking? Time is of the essence. Seconds count. Today I saw the stroke ambulance, sophisticated. You know, that seconds count. If you have a stroke, you got to get over to Rush or you got to get over to Loyola, it's going to be impossible to do. Madison Avenue is too late. One side is Forest Park, the other side is River Forest. If a third party traffic consultant looks at that, he's going to be able to say, wait a second, they're not even going to be able to get over to Rush or Park. It's like red light, you can't get through. Okay, so I hope I just gave you a general idea of what catastrophe, disaster this would be. That you, I mean, the people that save our lives and rescue us can't even get to us. So thank you for looking at my elementary illustration. Ask you to please what's really going on. Again, Mr. House's agenda, you know, he's going to get this person and that person, and we'll, you know, and as we're seeing tonight, the shadow study was there. If we are able, and I hope we are, for the greater good of all of us in this village, because it's not only going to impact us, it's a ripple effect. You know, if there's a disaster heading north, these poor people that are rescuing us can't get to. And seconds do count. So I ask of you to please get a third party involved that has a non-biased opinion, doesn't have his, you know, fingers in the pot, doesn't have an agenda. I think that's it. I really appreciate all your time.
Dan Lauber.
Daniel Lauber, 7215 Oak. I just wanted to comment on some of the specific provisions that are being proposed and stay on topic. The building height, whether or not you choose to increase the heights, I would urge you to amend the zoning code to require step-down zoning of any of these taller buildings that are adjacent to single-family districts, so that when the building gets to the point where it's adjacent to the single-family district or the alley, it's no more than two stories tall. I'd strongly encourage you to do that. At the first meeting on this, I distributed to you examples of step-down zoning where they had the shortest part on the street and the tallest away from the street. I'm suggesting we do it the other way, where the tallest part is on the street and the shortest part is adjacent to the single-family districts. That would be in compliance with the comprehensive plan's goal to maintain the atmosphere of the single-family districts. The reduction of the minimum lot area from 2,500 square feet to 1,000 square feet, I would strongly encourage you to do that. As author of a monograph on exclusionary zoning years ago that was reprinted by the American Bar Association and in another book, I can tell you that 2,800 square feet is an absolutely unjustifiable exclusionary practice, and it should be reduced to 1,000 square feet. Similarly, the minimum size of buildings, dwelling units, should be reduced. There is no legal basis for the size of dwelling units that we require. The proposal, though, to reduce on the off-street parking just escapes me, to require 1.5 spaces per unit. It is a ill-conceived idea. The proper way of handling off-street parking, and I draft off-street parking provisions for cities all over the country, as part of my consulting work as a zoning lawyer and planner, should be based on the number of bedrooms in each dwelling unit. They will generate a different number of cars. And this, when it says 2.5 spaces per unit, for example, or 1.5 spaces, no one's suggesting someone's driving only little smart cars. It's just how it averages out. I have been a little bit surprised that the proponents of these changes, President Ducey and the Economic Development Commission, have not been attending these ZBA meetings to present the reasons why they are seeking these changes. They should be here. They should have the guts to come here and explain to the public and to the ZBA why they're proposing these changes. I realize this is all in the comprehensive plan. and zoning by law is to be in compliance with the comprehensive plan, but it would behoove them to come to these hearings and explain this themselves. They are the policy makers, and it shouldn't be left to staff to carry the ball for them. Finally, I would hope that you will convey to Mr. Hauzio the request that he do the shadow studies and the drawings of step-down developments. He seems to be under the impression that he has not been asked to do that. I spoke with him today, and it would be extremely advisable to get him to provide that information to you, because as the planning adage goes, the better informed decision makers are, presumably the better decisions they'll make. Thanks very much.
Beth Chang.
Hello, I'm Beth Chang on the 0100 block of Franklin for over 20 years. Thank you, Chairman Martin, members of the commission, for your time and giving us all the opportunity to speak to you and your service to the village. I have just a few comments. The first couple I'll keep brief because other people have covered it, but I just want to kind of reinforce how important it is. The first is regarding the specific proposals, the fact that, as others have said, the specifics largely have not changed at all in response to public input. So that's a concern because it seems like it just keeps moving further along into text amendments with no real substantive change. I reiterate what my fellow residents have said about concerns about density, traffic, parking, when you're talking about a global zoning change that, you know, could mean multiple buildings coming in at higher densities. The second is about, the need for like a comprehensive written analysis, not just like verbal statements that we believe this is going to happen or we think this is going to happen, that covers all the implications of such a comprehensive change, not only for economic development, which we want to see in this village, but also for impacts on, you know, quality of life for residents, use of village services. I did not know, Chairman Martin, I'm very happy to hear that the zoning board did request some additional analysis, and I'm looking forward to seeing that. I apologize, I haven't apparently kept up with the minutes to know exactly what questions you asked, but I hope the questions you asked will yield this more comprehensive analysis. As others have mentioned, it is also hard for residents to kind of keep up with everything, so the more comprehensive the minutes are, that would be great. I came straight from work, and I'm missing a family event tonight to make sure to participate. My other two comments, I think maybe I haven't heard as much, so I do want to explain. And this has to do with how do these zoning changes intersect with other parts of the code. We've heard that things would still go through the plan development process, but what I don't understand, and I would like someone to explain, is if these zoning changes are made, does it mean that if a plan development fits within the zoning code that, you know, it's automatically okay? Or does it mean that a project could still be declined even though it fits within the zoning code because during the planned review process, somebody says, well, yes, it fits within zoning code, but we think it would affect traffic or density? I don't know the answer to that question. So if it could be addressed, that would be really helpful. The second thing that nobody has really mentioned is that if you go ahead with a comprehensive change to the commercial zoning districts, which that is actually another thing just kind of snuck in there, right? Like this was originally a proposal for the C1 and the C2, and all of a sudden it was like, oh, why don't we just do this for C3 and Oryk, which I didn't even know existed. So, but if you're going to make a comprehensive change to what's permitted in commercial zoning districts and trying to look holistically at the code, which is a logical thing to do, you should also be looking at the variance process, because it's very important to know that when we went to the early resident meetings with Hauzio and Levine, the statement was made that, well, we should agree as a community that this is what we're okay with, and we don't want to be granting individual variances. And so if we agree to this, then there won't be any variances in the future. And I have a serious concern that whatever you approve will become not the ceiling, but the new floor for requesting variances. And I would like to know how you would address that not happening, because it was represented that the idea was, let's agree on some more relaxed parameters, right? But I know I've heard in subsequent meetings already a little bit of creep of sort of like, well, then they would really only need to ask for like 5 or 10 feet as a variance instead of like 25. So I would say that if you're going to look at a comprehensive change to make the code more permissive, you need to look at the variance process in commercial districts and possibly consider like a heightened standard for variance requests, or maybe saying you're not going to allow variance requests, because as my residents, fellow residents have pointed out, it's really exhausting, right, to keep coming and being like, well, you know, here we are again, right? We said, okay, you keep proposing this, so all right, we understand you're trying to make something happen, we're okay with it, but then we have to come back again to raise concerns about variances. So thank you for listening to that. I wanted to share that since I don't think I've heard anybody else mention it. So would appreciate your consideration. Thank you.
Connie Giocaris.
Hi, my name is Connie Giocaris, and I live on the first block of Park Avenue for almost 30 years. And I just recently, in the last 2 days, looked at the details of what's going on Madison Avenue. And the three things that just appall me is that they're going to go up 4 stories and completely put those houses on Ashland and Franklin and Lathrop in shade. They're going to go right up to the sidewalk, and it is definitely, I mean, there's already a development across the street in Forest Park like that. That would really change the character of the neighborhood. And then the parking is just horrendous. There was talk of having overnight parking on Franklin and all day parking. Well, I come in and out of that alley all the time, like 3 times a day, and it's difficult when there actually is like 1 or 2 cars parked there to see what's going on. People honk their horn when they go to that alley, so they're really, and I chase these people down and say, you do not need to honk your horn, just go slowly. Well, it's going to probably entice people to honk their horn more and more. But I mean, the bottom line is the way I see this is that you want to lower the property taxes. That's what you're advertising for the village, but you're lowering our property values. Well, I guess.
Susan Adler.
Hi, I'm Susan Adler. I've only lived here for 35 years. I'm on the 0-100 block of Park with Connie. I just want to thank you guys. This seems like such a thankless job. Can't imagine having to sit here listening to all of us and how unhappy we are. But we are pretty unhappy. And the thing I don't know if you guys realize is how unheard we feel. You know, I mean, it's one thing how terrible this project is for us, but also just how unheard we feel. The organizers here describe this to me as kind of like hide and seek. You know, I don't know if you guys are aware, but you know, there's that Next Door Neighbor app, and I routinely read that. And yesterday at 4:13 is when the announcement was made that today was a meeting. Like, what is that about? You know what I mean? Like, why would you put that there at 4:13 the day before the meeting if you're actually interested in having input from the residents that are most affected by this? I would just think, as a matter of course, you would be really interested in hearing what the residents that are most affected by this have to say and getting their input, like, you know, responding to that. And I, you know, I'm just feeling like there is no response. It's kind of like, you know, information is going this way, but there's not that kind of dialogue that I would just expect from a village of this character. I mean, I'm very proud of this village. I think it's an amazing place to live. I think everyone feels that here. I just would like it to be more communication and more working together. Just makes sense with something this big. Thank you.
Greg Ebkarian.
First, let me thank you guys for listening to all of us. Like she said, this is probably a very thankless job. So thank you. First, I wanted to say to Mr. Walsh, you alluded while you were talking that the problem at Lake and Lathrop was because of the zoning. That had nothing to do with it. Lake and Lathrop was another disaster of your administration that you didn't listen to the public. So please don't try to put that and this together, that they are not even close to the same. I just wanted to get that out there because that's just really irritated me. But really, as everybody else has said, why change? We allow a lot of exceptions and variances, as they say, for people that come in with good ideas and present them to you. Again, as somebody pointed out, it's not a one-stop fits all for everybody. You can't just be like, all right, we're going to do all of this. And then it's going to work. Then you have no way to stop people from doing things that you don't want. Right there. And there's going to be people, trust me, if you change this, they're going to be like, oh, it's going to be much easier to do what we want. And it won't aesthetically look like we want in River Forest, or it won't have the backing of the residents. And if something doesn't have the backing of a majority of the residents, I think the town needs to listen to them. And I know we're nothing like Dalton, but I'm going to bring up Dalton. Their mayor is crazy. They don't listen to their citizens. Don't like their administration. They're trying to get rid of them. I'm not saying we're trying to get rid of anybody. What I'm trying to say is listen to your citizens. We come to these meetings when we finally find out when they're happening and we voice our opinion, but you don't bring anything back to us as the administration. They may listen to us. You know, when we did you guys did the traffic study, it took years of fighting finally for somebody to say, look at these numbers. I mean, my wife said, look at the data. And finally somebody did. And you noticed that you didn't need those things. So why are you making this change to say, oh, you know, we'll make these changes because we're tired of people coming in and asking. It's better they ask and we give them permission. Right. It just really is. Otherwise, they're going to start building things and you're not going to like it. And then you're going to have no recourse. And it just seems the city and not you guys, the things under a guise. Everything is like, hey, look at this over here. And then they do something over here. And then when we find out they're doing something over there and we try to say it, they're like, as I said, oh, it's been signed, or we already did this, or it's been approved. It's been voted on. It's kind of what happened with the traffic stuff. Right. One day I learned that you guys were putting traffic stuff all around where I lived. I didn't even get a notice in the mail about anything. And I'm in the northern quadrant. And I was like, oh, that's kind of, you know, interesting, you know. And then I learned about the meetings and started coming. So it's just everything you guys are doing is just, you hide it from us. And then when we do try to tell you, you don't listen. And it just gets aggravating. And I know, and everybody has said that. So I'm just reiterating what they say in just different words. So thank you for your time, and I appreciate everything.
Angie Grover.
Good evening, anyone. I probably last because I ran in here to put my name on the list. So I'm Angie Grover. I live at 7617 Vine, which is one block off Madison. You probably all know well. So thank you, Chairman and members of the board. I'm just going to make four quick points because I think everybody covered it, but I really appreciated what you said. It was number one on my list, which is taking these minimums really does create a new floor that can still come. So it can still come before you and you can now negotiate from that floor. And that negotiation gives me concern because we do want to develop in a responsible way, and a good process with a committed developer really will find a happy medium with the community and move it forward so that they don't have to deal with community meetings like this where everybody's lining up in protest. So I think that those minimums are really concerning to me. And zoning really needs to take into consideration the residential investment families have made in the community. So I moved out from the city. I bought on the south side of River Forest because I love the walkability. And that's, you know, that goes to the setbacks and everything else. Traffic between Lathrop and Madison, which is on the other side of my block, is unbearable, even with no buildings there. And, you know, when we put up really tall buildings with no parking or not adequate parking, we're going to congest that area even more. And it makes getting around town near impossible. There is no need to reduce the bedrooms. So I have a one bedroom or a condo in the city that is less than 1,000 square feet with two bedrooms and two baths. It's perfectly livable. So I don't understand what that particular part of the change is really aiming at. You know, if we are going to bring more families, if we do want more diversity, if we do want more density and more economic development, providing people with a nice place to live and not shoving people in a studio because somebody was able to get a building with studio apartments, to me, does not feel like responsible or a welcoming community. And yeah, and all I had here was diversity, density, and economic development can go hand in hand. And I really want you to think about how this fits in to bringing people into our community in a responsible way. And I'm on the other side of that block. I'm really interested in something being there. What was there before, with the exception of the historic building, was really a nothing burger, so to speak. So it would be great to have some development there that reflects the neighborhood, as well as brings the tax base in, which is what I hear this is driving at. So we need more tax dollars to do all the things we want to do. But it really needs to be thoughtful. So I appreciate you taking my comments into consideration.
Margie Sikander.
Here are someone's note cards, possibly. Yeah,
the elementary. Note cards.
I'm Margie Sikander, 500 block of River Oaks Drive. Thank you for your time for listening to us this evening. The current proposed zoning changes are unnecessary and may harm residents if the changes reduce the effectiveness of our zoning and our DRB review processes and accountability to residents. My family's lived here for 28 years. My mother moved here as well. We stay because of River Forest's character, a key part of which is its historic building and residential mix. We don't want a town of canyons like Oak Park and LaGrange have become. Over decades, citizens here have fought to keep the character, and I ask you to do the same. The village presidents and the board's petitioned zoning changes reflect continued disregard for residents' concerns and desires. Examples are repeated false, misleading, and disingenuous statements aimed at pushing through development regardless of residents' desires. In February and again in March 11th, I commented at the village board meeting about false and misleading statements in the weekly village newsletters. March 8th statement falsely stated a dry cleaning chemical was, quote, moving through our sewer system related to the Lake and Lathrop property, when in fact in 2009, Tetra Tech found significant contamination, quote, moving along the sewer line, not through the sewer line or system. The same newsletter stated the Illinois EPA affirmed no further remediation would be needed. In fact, barriers and venting are needed before an IEPA NFR letter would be issued. And Matt Walsh stated Monday night, no NFR on remediation had been issued. The newsletter states, to date, the village has not paid for any services or legal fees related to Lake and Lathrop. We all know the village paid Lake Lathrop Partners over $2 million to buy the property, in addition to years of village incurred legal fees, staff time, cleanup costs, sideway repair, and other costs. Other examples of disregard for residents relate directly to these zoning changes. Stating repeatedly in village-wide communications, the proposed zoning changes are to simplify regulations and clarify zoning codes, among them to adjust height maximums. Rather, it is to signal River Forest has weakened zoning codes so developers can build big, dense housing with little concern for residents, including those in single-family homes. adjusting height maximums is intentionally misleading for raising building heights to 65 feet in most districts, 50 feet along Madison Street. Zoning codes are safeguards to protect the quality of life for all residents and have been rigorously defended over decades to result in the high quality of life we love about River Forest. Also, the failure to notify the community except the minimum legal requirement, which I showed in January, the bare minimum when taxing bodies, governing bodies, show ads like this in the paper, much larger. The announcements didn't occur until after the January ZBA first hearing, denying residents of hearing important comparisons of the current to the proposed zoning changes. And yesterday, as someone mentioned, the notice on Nextdoor posted at 4:13 in the afternoon, again with the same misleading statements even after being challenged. Another example is mentioning at the State of the Village Monday night that a $350,000 grant was received for the demo of Lutheran Services, which was underspent by hiring a poorly run crew with inadequate village oversight. Demo was a disaster. Neighbors encountered hazardous materials and risky behaviors like shaking asbestos-filled rags outdoors. Trustee O'Connell, a former EDC member, Monday night was not aware of the timing of the 2020 neighbor meetings on the C1, C2 zoning changes. All trustees should be fully aware of the process and timetable for such consequential proposals that have long-term character-altering consequences. On Monday's board agenda was a new zoning map dated February 27th, 2024, with two minor changes on the 800 block of Thatcher and 900 block of Franklin. However, the map today, apparently on the village website, shows data January 2023 was altered for the C2 district, which you are considering and have been since January. C2 includes Hawthorne at Ashland and Hawthorne at Lathrop, also properties along Harlem and properties at Lake and Thatcher. With so many false, misleading, disingenuous statements from village leadership, how do residents believe what the village says? I can't trust them. Per the November 13th, 2023 board minutes, it was John Houseel and the village staff that proposed adding C3 and Oric districts to the zoning code changes. It likely was Mr. Houseel who stands to benefit financially. I thank Chairman Martin for requesting a shadow study of Madison Street, which should have been done with the EDC hired Houseel in 2022 and before meetings with residents. Why wasn't it? Now Mr. Houseel is hired to conduct and report the results. Is that rather like the fox watching the hen house? Mr. Houseel recalled Lake and Lathrop at first was first at 65-foot height, but records show the building's parapet reached 75 feet before removing the top floor due to financing. If zoning is 50 feet or 65 feet, developers will ask for higher heights. But if you weaken the DRB process by loosening zoning codes, you will reduce safeguards for residents. After 26 or 27 years as our hired village planner, it's time for change. I again call for a new village planner who will be responsive to residents' needs and desires. Development at all costs is the result of the tax burden on residents, from pension and healthcare obligations, nearly $1 million a year for the Northside sewer loan, moving earlier the alley replacements, and creating more TIF districts. TIFs collect property tax increases over 23 years to transfer taxpayer dollars to developers like at Lake and Lathrop, outside the direction of taxpayers, while taxing bodies get squeezed, so taxes on all other properties rise faster than without TIF districts. As the DRB knows, developers haven't been excluded due to our existing zoning codes. Here's the current village playbook. A commission, in this case the EDC, at John Houseel's direction, drafts a plan for change, holds public meetings with little notice, With a stated intent to collect resident input, the village board then has the appropriate board or commission review the changes for recommendation to the village board, in this case, the ZBA. When residents complain, they're told their concerns were included, regardless of whether they were, that they had ample time to express their concerns, that there were village processes in place to protect residents, whether they fully do or not. Then trustees vote for the predetermined outcome. But it all wasn't always this way. I asked trustees the other night, and I asked you, how would you feel if a 50 to 65 foot building was going up near you? If the board wanted development, why didn't they consider developing the Priory property? Justification to change zoning codes for four commercial districts is not convincing. Without a unanimous ZBA vote against the proposed changes, the village board likely will approve them to distract from its failure at Lake and Lathrop. I ask you to vote against these changes. Mr. Chairman, procedurally, could you please identify the requirements to notify neighbors and residents of the proposed zoning changes from the C1 and C2 districts for the addition of the C3 and Oric districts? It was stated by the ZBA secretary in January that comments would be part of the public record. How do residents see or obtain those comments, written or oral, submitted to any ZBA member beyond those made publicly during the two nights of the hearing? I appreciate Mr. Walsh clarifying conflicting comments I had heard from the ZBA members and the village board members about who is the final decision maker on these proposed zoning changes. I also appreciate Debbie Borman for advocating for residents. She filed a winning brief in the U.S. Supreme Court last month, and I'm not sure how many River Forest residents have done so. I ask again, regarding these proposed changes, is there a predetermined outcome? If so, why are we here? Thank you.
All right, there's no one else who is signed up to speak to the zoning board tonight. Do you have any members have any questions from to ask the people who testified? All right, then what's our
April 11th?
All right, then I think that we should consider a motion to continue the hearing to our next regularly scheduled meeting on April 11th and make it clear that the public portion of the hearing is not closed. We will accept additional testimony at that time.
Chairman Martin, may I make a couple comments? I didn't have any questions for anyone here, but I want to thank everyone for coming out and basically questioning, because these are your homes. And I live in this village too. And it's a small village, and that's why I moved here. And to hear that the village isn't letting you know that these meetings are happening, we're not going to rubber stamp anything. I can't speak for everyone on this board, but I can speak for myself when I say that I see what you're saying. It's very hard to trust this village, especially what's been going on at Lake and Lathrop, where certain members of the board, not all members of the board, gave them a free pass. And that's a lot of tax dollars we're missing out on. And we hear you here. And I just want to let you know, we're going to go over this with a fine tooth comb. Thank you.
Anybody else have any comments they want to make? Somebody want to make a motion to continue?
I'm sorry, I have one other comment. I want to echo Dan's comment, Chris. I want to echo your comments that we appreciate everyone coming out. I know that you've gone to the EDC, you've gone to the village board. Now you've been here twice. We don't have the shadow studies. We can't really move forward at this point. I can only imagine how frustrating this has been. And I really wish we could get another set of eyes on this, a different consultant to take a look. I mean, I can't imagine that this is time intensive work. Consultant will come back and say that Halziel's proposals are what's market now for a village like ours, and then we can consider that. But, you know, not having the shadow study tonight, not having any citizen comments incorporated over the past year, it just feels to me like we need a different set of eyes on it. And I don't know if I need to say that to Kathy or somebody, but...
Why don't you, if you know, we can condition our continued hearing or any decision that we make. If you want to make a motion of some kind, we'll we as a zoning board will consider it.
What would the motion be? Would it be that we?
You're asking for a study by a new study.
That's
pretty simple, isn't it?
Yeah.
I just want to make
okay.
That
so yeah, I feel like there are more experts in the room than I am right now. Is it true that that would be pretty simple to engage someone else
it's
to
simple
have a
motion?
Oh, simple motion. But you know the process, because I don't want this to drag out for two more years. But I feel like we just it would be good to have someone else in the room on this.
Then the thing to do is to put it before the zoning board.
And then it will go to the village board for consideration?
No, I don't think so. I think that's what we're telling the village, that we want additional information. And, you know, perhaps we're not going to make a decision until we get some additional information. And that seems to me what you're asking for. Mm-hmm.
So what does the rest of the board feel is appropriate here? Obviously, we need a shadow study with step downs. Do we want to ask Haziel to update his work to try to incorporate some of the citizen feedback?
Well, we want a separate consultant. We don't want Haziel doing it.
Okay, so what...
First off, I recognize that... what I am going to say doesn't mean anything until it's shown and acted on. So, but I'm going to say it anyways, because I think it's important. Your feedback is appreciated and taken in, and that part of the reason that this has been delayed is because of these considerations. Now, I understand that John Haziel has been the central figure in this because he is a planning consultant. He's been the planning consultant for a long time. John reports to me, he and I had discussions. Do not blame the delay of the shadow study and what came before on John Haziel.
It's committed to. Yeah. It's in the meeting minutes. It's one thing you did. So stop the spinning of the plates, please.
Oh, we don't want to hear anything else from the audience at this point.
Why are we hearing them?
Because we asked them to speak. You've already had your chance twice.
I understand the perspective of the zoning board. I would ask that further chance be given to John Haziel and myself to make that happen.
Okay. Thank you. Want to do something?
So if I make a motion to engage a different consultant, what are the ramifications of that? Does that go to the village board then and they decide?
Yeah, it's a recommendation.
Okay.
I think if you're asking, we recommend that the village board hire an additional consultant to review the information given us by Haziel Levine, and to make an independent study of the impact that the proposed zoning changes are going to have on the C districts. I think if that's what you're asking for, I think that's the kind of motion that you should put forth, and we'll consider it.
Okay, and do we as a board think that's the way to move forward? I mean, we could give Haziel another chance to update his recommendations, you know, and produce a shadow study, or should we just try to get a fresh set of eyes on this?
Essentially, you're looking for a fresh set of eyes.
That's what
you're asking for.
Right.
So I just make the motion to move ahead and see if the zoning board... support you. I get it done.
Okay. So I move to engage an independent consultant to look at these plans and look at all the resident feedback, all the meeting minutes, all the letters, and just come back with an opinion or some updated plans or something that incorporates the feedback. I mean, it can't just be A or B choice. There's got to be some, and Dan has been great about introducing some, you know, the step down and some ideas of how we could have a compromise here, but there's got to be a way to respond to resident feedback. So that's my long-winded motion.
I second it.
All right. Any discussion? Okay. I'll call the roll.
Ms. Shoemaker.
Aye.
Ms. Price.
Aye.
Mr. Plavach.
Yes.
Mr. Lucchese.
Yes.
Mr. Dombrowski.
No.
Ms. Davis.
Yes.
Chairman Mark.
No. All right, so that's the recommendation, or the request of the Zoning Board of Appeals is to have hired a new expert to review this whole, all the information that's come before us so far and the impact that information may have on the village if the proposed changes are adopted. Okay. So now can we have a motion to amend, to dismiss, continue?
I'll make a motion to continue the meeting to April 11th.
I second.
Right, and that's with the public portion of the meeting still open for comment. All right, any discussion? Call the roll.
Chairman Martin.
Yes.
Ms. Davis.
Yes.
Mr. Dombrowski.
Yes.
Mr. Lucchese.
Yes.
Mr. Plavach.
Yes.
Ms. Price.
Yes.
Ms. Shoemaker.
Yes.
All right, we have a motion to dismiss. Oh, we did that.
No, we have.
All right, let's do that.
I make a motion that we dismiss.
I second.
All in favor, say aye.
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 Dismissed. Okay.